From the Sri Satya Sai Media Center in Prashanthi Nilayam, you are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Dr. Sanjay Mahalingam, Faculty, Department of Management Studies, Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. Sri Sanjay joined for MBA in Swami's University in the year 2002 and later completed his PhD in 2008. He is an excellent orator and has acted in many plays in front of Bhagwan. As a student, he has had numerous interactions with Bhagwan, and in this talk that was delivered on the 25th of May 2019 as a part of the Region 1 Sai Retreat in United States, he shares many of his personal experiences and the learnings therefrom. Stay tuned, dear listeners, interspersed and after the talk, we have some upbeat songs by Dana Gillespie. And at 3:30 p.m., we have the live Telugu segment, Sri Satya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari. With that, over to Sri Sanjay Mahalingam.
Om Sri Sai Ram. Offering our loving pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Swami. Many years back, when Swami was going to Kodaikanal one year. For those of you who may not know, Kodaikanal is Swami's summer home. Some years, he used to take a group of students, some teachers, and he would travel to Kodaikanal and spend about anywhere between 15 and 25 days, usually in April or May. It's a dream for every student to get to accompany Swami on this beautiful trip. Many years back, when Swami used to drive all the way from Puttaparthi or Vrindavan to Kodaikanal, this incident is of those times. Swami was on his way to Kodaikanal in his black Mercedes car, and the blessed students whom Swami had selected were in the bus following Swami's car. As is Swami's wont, sometimes he would leave his car and hop on into the bus to be with the students. He would be simply chatting with them, joking with them, laughing with them, just giving them a good time. On one such occasion, Swami left his car and joined the students in the bus. Swami's arrival, the news of Swami's arrival spread, and when Swami's entourage was traveling through a town, hundreds and thousands of devotees had lined up on the streets to pay their obeisance to Swami. And all the devotees who had lined up with great devotion and love, they were all bowing down to the empty car. And Swami in the bus said to the students, "See, this is the power of company. Because of its association with me, the empty car is getting so much respect." And then Swami jokingly quipped, "Because of my association with you all, I have lost all respect. Nobody is bowing down to the bus." Why I say this is because, as I have been traveling through the US since 29th of April, it's a 1 month long tour starting from the West Coast, I have had the great opportunity of talking to so many devotees, staying with so many devotees, such wonderful hosts who have taken care of us with so much love. And as I have listened to their stories, I'm more convinced than ever that anybody of you could be standing here and giving this talk. But I am standing here only because of the importance that you give in your mind to the association that I have had with a certain place, Puttaparthi, with a certain divine being whom we all call Swami. So it is only in our minds. In the truest sense, all are one. And anybody could be standing here and giving this talk. It's important that I start with this disclaimer. In 1996, when I was 16 years of age, As most mothers, my mother also used to worry a lot about me. I used to be a very playful kid, hardly focusing on studies, just playing around. And she used to worry a lot, what's going to happen to this boy? How is he going to end up? What's going to be his career? What's his life going to be like? One day Swami came in my mother's dream. And he said, "Don't worry, I will take care of your children. Me and my sister, I will take care of your children." This was in June. In December the same year, 1996, my mother had a fracture and she was bedridden. She was sitting on the bed one afternoon, 2 p.m. She was reading the book, The Ultimate Experience by Phyllis Crystal. She just looked up and Swami was standing there at the entrance of the room, leaning against the wall and smiling at my mom. Obviously, my mom was taken aback. And then Swami said, "Your children are my children. I will take care of them. Don't worry." And then Swami said, "You keep worrying about your son a lot. About Sanjay. Sanjay will do systems management." All this he said in Tamil. He said, "Baba baba nu sonna poduma. Faith irukkanum." He said, "It's not enough to just say baba baba. You must have faith. I will take care of your children. Sanjay systems management da pannuvan," he said. "Your son will do systems management." My mother was a housewife, and this I am speaking about 1996, the pre-internet era. I know the SCC students won't even know what it means. No internet, no phones, no mobile phones, no emails. So my mother didn't even know. She was a housewife. She didn't even know what these words mean. Systems management, what does it even mean? So she shouted for my dad. My dad came running and she said, "Swami appeared." My dad said, "How can that be? We are casual, we are just ordinary devotees. You must have slept, dozed off while reading the book, and Swami must have appeared in your dream." She said, "No, I was wide awake. Swami was standing right there. And he said, Sanjay will do systems management. What does it mean?" My dad also was not sure. He said, "I think systems means something to do with computers. Management means something to do with, well, I think MBA or something." And through a lot of accidental sequence of events, I did indeed end up doing my engineering in computer science and then my MBA and PhD in management from the Sri Sathya Institute of Higher Learning. My first designation in the Sri Sathya Institute of Higher Learning was Deputy Manager Systems. And my second designation, which I currently hold, is Faculty Department of Management. Of course, this happened exactly 15 years after 1996, but it happened. The first interview that my parents got 10 days before Guru Purnima in the July of 2004, as my mother entered the interview room, Swami said, "Dream la vandhu sonne, nera vandhu sonne. I came in your dream and I told you. I came directly and I told you. Now I am telling you face to face. Your children are my children. I will take care of them. I take responsibility of them. Don't worry." In the first personal interview that I had with Swami, I had the opportunity to be with in the interview room with few people before, many times before that. But the first time I was alone with Swami, just Swami and me. It was 17th February 2004. It was exactly one day before that year's Shivratri, which was 18th February. Swami called me around 7:30 in the morning. He called me, and first time I was alone with Swami, and Swami hugged me. I hugged Swami. He kissed me, and I kissed Swami. And Swami cried, and I cried. And Swami said, "Something which I have not understood or deciphered till date." He just said, "I have been waiting for this chance for so long." These were my thoughts, but Swami said this. "Over the years I have realized that Swami is watching over us way before we have learned to look to Him. Swami is seeking us way before we have started to seek Him. Swami remembers us way before we have learned to think of Him. And this has been my experience even before we have offered ourselves to Swami. Swami has already taken our burden. And if our heart reverberates with the love of Swami, then this is certain that our relationship with Swami is very, very old and ancient. Way older than what we all realize. We have known Swami, been with Swami for very long. Swami's assurance, that assurance does not mean life will be a bed of roses. In fact, some of the most challenging years of my life have been the ones that I spent with Swami. When Swami says, I will take care of you, well, beware. What it really means is that He will simply accelerate your evolution, which means, well, sooner than you expected, you will get to know yourself as you truly are, which really means that all the muck within, which would have come out slowly, will come out at a much faster rate, and you will have simply much more to deal with than very often we can handle. So life is not a bed of roses, but some beautiful moments with Swami. The loving moments, the gentle, beautiful moments that we get to spend with Swami make that journey, which is actually pretty difficult, make that journey slightly more palatable to the mind, of course. One day as I was sleeping in the dining hall of the senior boys' hostel, I had a dream. Swami had entered the dining hall in His car early morning. It was actually early morning, and in the dream also it was early morning. And I woke up and Swami said, "Shh, don't wake up the other students. I have come only for you." And Swami's car passed through the dining hall. He exited the dining hall through the next door. I ran behind Swami's car. Swami got down from the car, went and sat on the parapet, small tiny parapet in the senior boys' hostel, near the water cooler. I ran to Him, I sat at His feet. And Swami was in a very loving, very joyful and ecstatic mood. And He said, "Give me some water. I'm thirsty." I took the steel tumbler. All this is happening in my dream. I took the steel tumbler from which the students drink water. I filled the water from the water cooler and I gave it to Swami. Swami said, "You give." And then I fed water to Swami directly with my own hands. It was a very blissful dream. How I know? Because when I got up, all my cheeks were all wet with tears. My shirt collar was quite damp. So I was very, very blissed out. And the dream got over. I got up. I got ready. Those days, students generally don't go for morning darshans, but those days Swami had asked me to come, so I was going for morning darshans. 8 o'clock, Swami called me for an interview. There were 3 people in the interview room. Swami was there, I was there, and one brother, Rameshwar Pushti. He used to push Swami's chair for a long time. He was there. 3 of us were sitting in the interview room. It was around 7:45, 8 a.m. So usually how it works is Swami will be sitting on His chair and there will be a stool to His right, usually right or left, and there will be a silver tumbler with water. So Swami indicates to the water, then whoever is closest to that is supposed to hand over water to Swami. In the interview, as Swami was discussing some mundane things, suddenly He looked at the glass tumbler. Now I was closest, so I took the silver tumbler and I kneeled down. And I was on my knees holding the silver tumbler for Swami. And Swami just did not move. He just kept His hands like this and kept looking at me. Now I am on my knees holding the silver tumbler of water. Swami is just like this looking at me. What to do now? Swami has already asked for water, so you can't just keep it back. Swami is not extending His hand. What do you do? And we are all sitting like this for 10 seconds wondering what to do. Swami kept looking at the glass with great intent. And then suddenly I remembered the dream which I had just 3 hours back. And I gave water to Swami in His mouth. And Swami consumed the glass of water and He broke into a laughter. And I was so touched. It was a beautiful moment. Swami was happy. I was very touched. And Rameshwar Prushti was completely confused. What is happening? Look at this boy's gut. Swami will ask water. He wants to give in Swami's mouth. But then, well, only Swami and I knew what had happened just 3 hours back, the same morning I had that dream. And Swami, you know, it just, as it is, a photocopy happened just 3 hours later. The Sri Sathya Sai Senior Boys Hostel is a very Spartan lifestyle. A dormitory system. Students of Swami sitting here, both from Puttaparthi and Anantapur, they will know. 10, 15, 20 students in a dormitory type accommodation. It's tough. It's wonderful. A great learning experience, but it is Spartan. So, things happen, you know. I don't remember what happened, but I remember this much, that something happened and I was very disturbed. I went to bed, I couldn't get sleep. I was just tossing this side, that side like a dosa. Well, dosa is an Indian food, you keep tossing it up, down. So I kept going left, right, I didn't get sleep. Till I think around midnight, 12 or something. Next day I was in the interview room and Swami said, you know, I'm very tired. I said, why Swami, what happened? Swami said, I didn't get good sleep yesterday. I didn't sleep till 11:30. Swami said, exactly 11:30. I said, why? Swami, what happened? Swami said, if you cannot sleep, how can I sleep? Your pain is my pain. Your joy is my joy. There is no difference. So these are some of the many moments that make the spiritual journey, which is challenging, actually very beautiful. There are many wonderful things that I have gathered or learnt from Swami over the years. Swami always says, silence is silence. Of course, when Swami says silence, he means something very profound, which probably we'll get to discuss more in the workshops that we will conduct today. But Swami always says, speak only when it improves on the silence. When you are new to Swami, which I mean when Swami is beginning to speak to you, Swami is a great master at making you feel very, very special when he wants to. He is just unbelievable. He will make you feel that he has descended only for you. If for you, but for you, he may not have had the avatarhood at all. He will make you feel. And he has made millions feel like that. But when he makes you feel like that, you will feel you are the first and the last who has got this kind of affection. But there will be millions before you and millions after you. This is Swami's game. But it is very difficult to see when you are in the game. Anyway, be that as it may, when Swami is newly giving you attention, we take liberties with Swami. You can just get away with saying anything. Only after a few months you begin to realize the importance of being conscious, alert. And remember, you are sitting in front of a great spiritual being. Be alert. How you sit, what you say, what you do, how you move. You have to be conscious and aware. But in the beginning, you could just basically say anything and get away. It was, you know, it's like a new romance. So it was that time. In 2006, by the time Swami had got my sister, my grandparents, everybody to Puttaparthi, we're all living in Puttaparthi. And Swami, so it was 2006 actually, May, Swami had just returned from Kodaikanal. We all had returned with Swami and we were staying in Vrindavan and we used to have something what is called the Trai Sessions. What is Trai Sessions is evening, after the evening bhajans, Swami would call the students, whoever is staying back, into his residence, which was called Trai Vrindavan, which is Swami's residence in Whitefield Ashram, Vrindavan. So Swami would call all the students in the main hall and he would sit on his jhula and Swami will just talk to students He might give a discourse, or he might ask somebody to speak, or he may just, you know, joke around. So these sessions were very beautiful and very lively, and they were called tri-sessions. Only students can attend those sessions, and only those specific gentlemen or ladies whom Swami specifically asks them to come, only they can come. Otherwise, these sessions were only for students. So on one such occasion, Swami told me, call your grandfather and ask him to attend these sessions. He was in Puttaparthi at the time. So I phoned him and I asked him to come. And he came. So when the announcement is made, so Swami has come down and the gates open of Trai Vrindavan, all the students run. You know, they run to get a front row in the Trai. So my grandfather also ran. And he slipped at the entrance of the Trai. He just slipped, he went 4 feet in the air and fell straight on his back. I was already sitting in the front row already. So, and Swami had just about to come. So somebody just sent me a chit. Because it's very difficult to reach me, there's a big ocean of students between me and the first row. So somebody sent me a chit, grandfather fallen, he is admitted in the general hospital. So when Swami came, the session was over, I just stood up and I gave this to Swami. I told Swami that Swami, this is what has happened. And Swami, he just shivered with pain. I could just feel, Swami just, you know, he felt a deep pain and he said, I will take care. You go and see your Tata. So I went to the hospital, he was in extreme pain. My Tata was a very, very physically fit and very strong person. And the pain he was undergoing was unimaginable. Dr. Sundareshan, who till recently was the director of the Sri Satsai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences in Whitefield, a very renowned orthopedic surgeon, he came, we did CT scans and whatever scans were required, and he said, see, your Tata has a severe spinal fracture and he needs complete bed rest, and we will have to do a cardiothoracic surgery, which I really don't know, I am not a medical person, but it's something like an opening will have to be made here, and through the ribs we will have to go and do some complex procedure. It's a complex operation, I can do it, you ask Swami what needs to be done. Unfortunately, next day morning, Swami was leaving for Puttaparthi. Suddenly, he decided he's going back. So, I couldn't really get a chance to tell all this to Swami, and I just went to Swami. Swami, I told Tata, and Swami said, okay, don't worry. I am going to Parthi. Now, you get Tata there, we will talk. Then I said, Swami, Tata is in great pain. How will I get him? Then Swami gave detailed instructions. He said, you hire a cab, you put one pillow here, you put one pillow here, and he explained where all to put pillow, and he said, you get him. Somehow, with great difficulty, we took Tata to Puttaparthi. Excruciating pain, and Swami was already there in Puttaparthi. So Swami said, I will tell you what to do. So when Swami says, I will tell you what to do, it is an unwritten rule amongst the students of Swami that we don't remind Swami. We don't go and say, Swami, remember? You said, you will tell me, you haven't told me. No. If Swami says, I will tell you what to do, he may tell you in a day, in a month, in a year. He may take a couple of lifetimes also. But, well, you just wait. Just wait. Just sit. Wait. So it was easy for me to wait, but my Tata was struggling. And 10 days had passed, and Swami said nothing. And my Tata was bedridden, just lying down on the bed in unbelievable pain. And my grandmother was getting very frustrated. I said, why are you not asking Swami? Please ask. What is to be done? And I told her, well, Swami has told, he will tell us, so let us just see. On the fourth day, I bumped into Dr. Sundareshan in the ashram. And he said, so your Tata surgery is over? How is he? I said, no sir, he is in the room, lying down on his bed. And he said, oh my God, what is wrong with you? His spine will collapse. And he could die or he could get paralyzed. You are not understanding what a serious matter it is. Please go and ask Swami right now what is to be done. Don't be stupid, he told me. Well, you know, self-doubt, what should I go and ask Swami? Should I sit with a letter? But Swami has already told, he will tell, you know, but then wisdom prevailed and I just kept quiet. Let us see, let us see. On the 11th day, Swami asked me, how is your Tata? I said, well, how Swami? He is bedridden, he is in unbelievable pain. And Dr. Sundareshan is saying that this surgery has to be done. No offense to Dr. Sundareshan, but Swami said in the bhajan hall, he doesn't know anything. these doctors, they think human body is brinjal or carrot. That's what he said, is a carrot or some brinjal. Just to get better at their profession, they keep wanting to cut human bodies. No need for surgery. You get Tata to interview room tomorrow, I will see. So then Swami, I said, Swami, how will I get? He's not able to get up. Then Swami called Sri Chakravarti Garu and said, you arrange, make arrangements. Then he made arrangements for a special wheelchair, and somehow we made Tata sit on that. Then I took him inside the interview room. In the interview room, Swami created some paste, like a gel, which looked like coconut oil, transparent white paste, but it was not coconut oil. It didn't smell like that. It was odorless. And Swami asked my Tata to remove his shirt, and he applied it on his spinal injury. And he said, you come tomorrow. Like that, for the next seven days, every day I took my Tata. This was a ritual. 5 minute interview, no talking, nothing. Swami would say, remove shirt, he will create, he will apply. That's all. On the seventh day after applying, Swami said, this is enough. Take complete bed rest for 2 weeks. Don't get up, just rest, don't come for darshan, do nothing, just take rest for 14 days, 2 weeks. This was 2006. My Tata passed away at the end of 2017. For the next 12 years, he used to get up at 4 a.m. every day, wash his own clothes, lead an active life. He never got any surgery done, never took any medicine, and the problem never recurred. There are many such instances where Swami comes to the aid of his devotees, and there are so many. I'm sure all of you will have so many experiences where Swami has guided through a dream or through a book or a friend or directly. But now I will move on to a series of, for lack of a better word, I'll call it experiences or incidents, which gave me very important pointers as to how I should live my life. One day, we all asked, 4 or 5 of us were in the interview, and said, Swami, all we want is to serve you. And Swami said, I don't want any servants. I am your servant. And we said, Swami, no, Swami, we are your servants. Swami said, no. You are all masters. I am your servant. I have come here to serve you. I don't want any servants. Then we said, Swami, what can we do for you? And Swami said, be happy. I have asked this question to Swami at least 6 or 7 times in my life, 6 or 7 times. Each time when I ask Swami, Swami, what can I do for you? Tell me what you have done so much. What can I do for you? Swami, every time without exception, he had the same answer. He said, be happy. One day, a special new chair, a new throne had arrived for Swami, and it was kept in the inner interview room. I was aware of it. So in the interview room, Swami suddenly asked, where is my chair? I said, Swami, it is in this room. Then Swami asked again, where is my chair? I said, Swami, it is in this interview room. Shall I go and fetch it? Would you like to have a look? Swami said, where is my chair? Well, by the time I realized that my answer was not working out, so just keep quiet. So I just looked at Swami, and Swami pulled my collar, shirt collar, he pulled me towards him, and he, with his index finger, he pointed here and he said, there is my chair, sir. There is my chair.
Light in my heart. so I may hear you. Be my eyes so that I may see. Oh, be in my soul my hidden treasure. Be my life as it ought to be. A light in my heart of hearts. A light.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We will now continue with the talk by Sri Sanjay Mahalingam that was delivered as a part of the Region 1 Sai Retreat in the United States in May 2019.
Atirudra Mahayagnam 2006 was on. If anybody of you visited Pattupatti that time, Swami had created such a excitement about that. It was the first Yajnam, of course, in 2007, Chennai organized, and then many more have been organized after that. But the first time Atirudra Mahayajna was organized was in 2006 in Puttaparthi. Thousands of devotees had assembled in Puttaparthi. I have never seen such excitement and a crowd in Puttaparthi ever. Not even for Swami's birthday or Shivaratri or Guru Purnima, but the palpable excitement in the air was just something to be seen to be believed. And people were just looking forward, and people were flying in from Australia, from Canada, just for a day, for half a day, just to see what's happening there and then fly out again. You know, that was the frenzy. And when we want something, life is always challenging because we have to chase it. If you all say that we live in ashrama, or at least I live in an ashram, what does the word ashram mean? Literally, it simply means beyond all effort. Shrama means labor, effort. Loosely translated, it could also mean stress. A means it's an antonym, a prefix which signifies the opposite or something that transcends. So ashrama means a state where there is complete comfort, complete relaxation, completely you are just in harmony. So when we are in that state, we are all living in ashram. If you are tense, if we are running here and there inside ourselves, then we could be living in the most divine physical ambience, but we are not really in an ashram. So it was that time, and everybody was excited. Everybody was struggling to somehow get close to have a glimpse of Swami. And you know what happens in the Purnahuti of the Yajnam. Purnahuti is the last day when the final oblation is made to the fire, the final offerings are made. And then Swami goes around sprinkling the holy water on the devotees. Anybody who has attended a fire ceremony, what we call Yajna in Sanskrit, in India would know that Swami will have a broom. And with that, the priest will carry a huge bowl of consecrated water. And Swami would go around dipping the broom and sprinkling the water on everybody. And devotees would consider it so amazing to just get a drop, tiny drop of water on, fallen on the head or touch our body. So when the Purnahuti day was coming close and the frenzy was unbelievable.
And every day I would come running for darshan early, but I wouldn't find any place to sit. And one day, as I was running for darshan, it suddenly dawned on me, well, what's going to happen if I get a good spot? What's going to happen if that water falls on me? What's the best thing that can happen? The best thing that can happen is that I completely get rooted in the here and now. So I won't run there so that I can go there and be here. Why can I not be here right now? So 2-3 days I was contemplating on that, and the frenzy had reached a crescendo. It was the Purnahuti day, and I said, I'm just going to be with myself. Keep Swami here. Be in harmony. Have a nice, comfortable day. Do my morning prayers, meditation. And 8 o'clock, I will slowly go to the mandir. Everybody was sitting from 5:30, 6. Even students who usually have a reserved block, even they were sitting from 6 o'clock. Devotees, I don't even know what was going on. They must be sitting probably from midnight. As I expected, there was not an inch of place in the Kulwant Hall for me to sit. Not an inch. So, what had happened was, the last 9 days, Swami was not going in the veranda. Veranda is the upper portico where the biggest VIP devotees of Swami would sit. All the vice chancellor and all those people. Swami, I was not going. Because there are so many devotees, Swami was spending the entire time in the lower portico giving public darshan. So he was not going there. So all the VIPs had shifted themselves to the front. So I went, there was not an inch of place, but the entire upper veranda was empty. So I found a nice place for myself, and I sat there, and I closed my eyes, and I was trying to, touch Swami within. And I could hear the commotion outside, the music started, Swami came, it was all going on, big hangama was going on, the Purnavati was over, and I could hear people screaming, and Swami was going around sprinkling water. And I was still sitting there with my eyes closed. And as the commotion outside increased, the silence within me deepened. It was a nice contrast, and I was very glad I am here. I was deep inside me, I was becoming more and more sure that I am not missing anything. And then I was rudely awakened by a bucket full of water falling on my head. I was like, oh, what was that? And I saw Swami right there, 10 inches from me. And I have never seen Swami smile so widely. He was almost enjoying the moment. What had happened? Later on I asked what happened. What happened was, as Swami was crossing the primary school area, and for the last 8 days he was going to the devotees, that for one day, for some reason, Swami cut back into the upper veranda. There was only one person sitting there, me and one sevadar. Nobody else. And it was too late for anybody to come running to the veranda because Swami had entered the veranda. Only I was there. Swami came, he stopped his chair in front of me, his wheelchair. He dipped the broom in the water and chapak, he gave it on my face. And I was drenched with water. And I said, oh my God. So they say, something when you stop chasing, that thing may start chasing you. But every time when we sit quietly, life will not turn out so nicely. That day Swami may have or may not have put water on me. Only thing is, if he had not put water, I wouldn't be sharing this story. The whole masala comes because water fell on me. But the fact remains that what I had found with my eyes closed sitting there was more valuable than any tons of water that could fall on my head. Because the whole purpose of that water in our mind is to attain to that harmony within ourselves and align ourselves with Swami's divine energy. So that is the wonderful lesson I learned that day. It just had a very entertaining climax, but that may not be the case always. So we all have these ideas of what it is to be spiritual. We will dwell on this more during the workshop, but I also had certain ideas. Often we think if we dress a certain way, we are spiritual. If we talk a certain way, we are spiritual. If we behave a certain way, we are spiritual. If we read certain books, we are spiritual. But what it is to be truly spiritual, we really don't know. Or most of us don't know. I also did not know. So I was becoming weirder and weirder. And well, Swami was encouraging me. Good. So what I ended up doing was reading lots of books. Reading Bhagavad Gita, reading this, reading that. You know, and then going and talking about it. Giving talks. Swami used to give me a lot of chances to give talks in His presence. And this was going on. I used to get up at morning 3:30. In the hostel, used to have head bath, go to the terrace and sit and do something which at that time I thought was meditation. Now I think I know better. I became socially incapable. I could not make friends. I could not keep friends. I forgot to smile. And I was basically, to put it very shortly, deeply miserable. So usually, not just in Puttaparthi, that's very rampant in Puttaparthi, but generally in life also I have seen, the more miserable you look, the more spiritual people think you are. It is really true. If you look like totally glum and tight and rigid and serious and give that Vivekananda pose, then people think, wow, you must be doing a real lot of sadhana. If you look happy, joyful, cheerful, people think, poor fellow, he has fallen on the path. And this has been my experience living in Puttaparthi for the last 18, 19 years. So as I was becoming more and more miserable, people in Puttaparthi started thinking more and more highly of me. And I used to give talks also in Puttaparthi, in Swami's presence. And this was going on. So the more adulation I got, within me I was actually becoming more and more miserable. And Swami was encouraging me. Very good. Read more books. Wo book pada, ye book pada. Oh. And this was going on and on. And I started putting vibhuti. 13 places. Every day I will have bath 3 times a day. In the hostel. Now those who have lived in the hostel would know how difficult it is and do Sandhya Vandanam. Now Sandhya Vandanam is very beautiful. Don't mistake me. I am not demeaning anything. But I am only highlighting the inner state from which all this was coming. 3 times. And Swami started, first used to call me Delhi boy. Because I came from Delhi. Then he started calling me Vibhuti boy. It's not a joke. And I used to put, you know, like full like this and like this. There are 13 places, actually there are 13 chakras where you put here, here, here. And I used to be look like a complete clown. And then this was going on and I had reduced my eating because I thought spiritual people, why should they eat? They should get energy directly from, you know, the inner source. Why do we need calories from food? All this is rubbish ideas. And this body right now, I am a proper weight, I am quite fit. This body right now in kilos is 79 kilos. This body, same height, had become 69 kilos. If you just shave off 10 kilos from this body, what will be left? I was just all bones. In 2007, Swami called me for an interview. And Swami said, he looked alarmed. Actually, he was speaking to me continuously, but that day suddenly he looked alarmed and he said, what have you done to yourself? What is all this? Then he said, I promise your mother I will take care of you. Today if she comes here and asks me, Swami, is this what you have taken care? What will I say? And then Swami said, in the course of the interview, make a big bundle. Put all your books in that bundle. Tie the bundle and go throw all your books in the Chitravati. From today onwards, I don't want you to read a single spiritual book ever. And then Swami said something beautiful. He said, only from source, not from force. Then he repeated, he said, no force, only source. Well, I didn't throw my books in Chitravati because there was no water in the Chitravati. But I just gave away all my books. I came back to hostel that day and I broke down. And I cried like I have never cried in my life. Tears simply would not stop. I think it was the accumulated pain of God knows how long, and I just wept and wept and wept. And when Swami said in the entry room, no force, only source, something broke inside me. And of course, over the years, many things happened, but it was that day and it is today. I have not read a single spiritual book in my life. Not a single book. There was a time I almost used to know 650 shlokas out of the 700 in the Gita. Today I remember only Brahmarpanam and Aham Vaishwanaro. But I am so much more happier today. Something I have found inside myself, which a million books and a thousand talks cannot give and cannot take away. Sometimes a friend will give a book or two. I might just flip through the pages, just read a page here, page there. But I have not touched a single book. I have not picked up a single book with the intention of reading it and read through the book. It has not happened. I have forgotten most of the things I knew. But of course, something else Swami has given me in that stead. But this was a very watershed moment in my life. And of course, over the years, the next few years, Swami guided me what he meant by no force, only source. Some of those things we'll be discussing again in the workshop. I hope I'm doing a good job of selling my workshop, right? By every now and then saying we'll discuss in the workshop. Just so that you know you all are there. I'm just joking. Okay. In 2009, one day Swami finished his darshan. It was, I think, February 2009. Swami finished his darshan and came to the interview room. I was already sitting in the interview room. Swami came inside and he said, I feel very sad that after so many years, like when I am going for darshan, all the devotees are doing like this. Means they are turning their head as I am moving. And Swami said, I feel sad that they are thinking that there is something here that is not there. Swami said, pointing to himself, that devotees are thinking that there is something here that is not there. That is, there is something in Swami which is not within ourselves already. Then one another day, this one is not documented anywhere. Nobody knows, because Swami came inside the bhajan hall and he started muttering something. And only those who would probably be in the first or the second row in the bhajan hall would really heard what Swami said. I was right there. And Swami said, he looked very disturbed and frustrated. And he was like, na life anta waste. Swami said, my life is waste. And he kept saying that, waste, anta waste. Everyone charchi poledu, Swami said. None of you has died. None of you has died. Then Swami asked, will you die? So usually when Swami asks, will you, to students, irrespective of what follows, we usually say, yes, Swami. So Swami said, will you die? And we all said, yes, Swami. We really didn't know. I don't know how many of us knew what Swami was meaning, but Swami said, waste, anta waste. Koi bhi nahi mara. I'm translating in Hindi. So nobody has died. Will you die? You will die? Who wants to die? Swami said. Anyway, that was the end of it. Swami sat and then he became cheerful and the bhajans concluded and everything was hunky-dory again. But when I went back to the hostel and I sat contemplating, what did Swami mean? Who has to die? What has to die? And why should anybody die? And why does Swami want us to die? What is going on? Of course, over the years, I have begun to realize within ourselves that what Swami meant was just this. We still haven't died to our unreal self. We still haven't died to the false identifications that we carry. That I am this, I am that, I am this, I am that, I am of this type, I am of that type. We have not died to our false self so that what we truly are can emerge from within. As it is said in the Bible, Jesus says in the Bible, and I'm just paraphrasing, I don't remember the exact thing, but to this effect, something he says that, I have come to kill you so that you can be born into real life. Or something to that effect. So Swami said, nobody has died. None of you has died to your ego so that what you truly are
can emerge, radiant and shining. So nobody has died.
One day in Kodaikanal, Swami asked, "Who am I?" In 2006. And devotee said, "Swami, you are unconditional love." Swami said, "Che, donna pota." And somebody said, "Swami, you are embodiment of truth." Kadu kadu. And somebody said, "Swami, you are paripurna avatar." Swami said, "Adu nenu kade kadu. That I am definitely not." And then Swami answered the question. He said, "Nenu nene. I am I." Of course, then the conversation stopped, but again, my reflections, all these are just words. "Swami, you are this, you are that." Who knows? Just labels. Swami said, "I am I. Nenu nene." Once a group of Delhi alumni, some ex-students from Delhi, had arrived to Puttaparthi in 2005, this was. And they were sitting in the interview room with Swami, and I was also there. And they said, "Swami, we are not able to feel your presence in Delhi." And Swami said, "Are you able to feel your presence in Delhi?" And then Swami said, "Your presence is the same as my presence. There is no difference." You know, there are many beautiful things that Swami says. I used to come back and write in my diary. At that time, it did not dawn. But over the years, as I matured, many, when I opened ready, "Oh, this is what Swami said, good Lord," and you meditate on that and you begin to realize in a deeper way what Swami meant. So this is a very common practice. So as we mature, you know, we begin to understand the deeper and deeper sense that what Swami truly meant. One day I asked a question to Swami. You know, those who have had the chance to talk to Swami would always wonder, not just me, everybody wonder, why is it so difficult to have a spiritual conversation with Swami? Why is Swami always so bothered about how many idlis we had for breakfast? Why can't he tell us some great thing, some advanced spiritual funda that can liberate us? Why every time he has to talk about politics or how what you had for breakfast? Why you had only 3? Why not 4? Arey Swami, chodo na yaar, kuch acha cheez batao. But he won't. And over there he realized, because it is such a subjective thing, that Swami just keeps waiting that in his divine presence, the light will shine forth from within ourselves. But then, you know, he just waits. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. On one such occasion, I asked Swami a question. Luckily, that day, I got a beautiful answer which has remained the mantra of my life. And Swami said, "See, whatever answer," and I'm quoting Swami here exactly, just translating, "whatever answer the mind finds to a question, that answer will lead to 1,000 more questions. Whatever answer we find at the mental level will lead to 1,000 more questions. Therefore," Swami said, "drop all questions. Fill your mind with only one question. Who am I?" Fill your mind with only this one question. I have 10 minutes more. I will end my talk with just one more experience, which is an experience. Well, it's not really an experience, as if it's not a miracle or something, but something that is very close to my heart. Of course, when I underwent the experience, it was quite unbelievable misery. But today, it is the most valuable 15 days of my life. 2004, there was a rumor that Swami might go to Kodaikanal. He did not. He did go in 2005. But 2004, now it's a dream of every student to accompany Swami to Kodaikanal. So I remember one day, it was one of those days, you know, where I was taking liberties with Swami. You could say anything. It was on the first floor of Swami's residence in Vrindavan, in Thrai Vrindavan. On the first floor, Swami was there, I was there, and who was the warden of the Vrindavan campus at that time? He was. Three of us were there. And Swami said, I am thinking of going to Kodaikanal. Then he asked Narasimhamurthy, sir, I am going to Kodaikanal. You want to come? He said, Swami, wherever you are, that is only Kodaikanal for me. Then I said immediately, without waiting, Swami, this person has gone 11 times to Kodaikanal. I have not got one gone once also. I want to go to Kodaikanal only. Please take me to Kodaikanal. Here I am not happy. I want to go to Kodaikanal. Take me to Kodaikanal. There I will be with you. Swami laughed. Anyway, he never asked me to repeat that. He just laughed. I laughed and sir was left red-faced. But then 2005, Swami did go to Kodaikanal. And something peculiar happened. So usually there is a list that is made, which includes the names of the people whom Swami has selected to accompany him to Kodaikanal. And that list gets populated over a period of 2 to 3 weeks. Till that year, it was always done by the registrar of the university. Sri Lakshmi Narasimhan sir was the registrar at that time. So usually he will walk behind Swami during darshan or something. Swami will be going for darshan. He will just look at somebody and then look at the registrar. It's a very subtle communication. Nobody will know. He will know. He will write down the name. And then back in the interview room, he will get it confirmed with Swami. Swami, this, did you mean this person? Did you mean this person? And Swami will say yes, no. And Swami will say add that person. And slowly, you know, there will be additions, deletions. Sometimes Swami will add one person and then say in the end, 2 days before, no, leave that person. So like that, slowly, that list of about 15-20 people gets created over a period of 2 weeks. That year, for the first time and the last time, Swami asked a student to prepare that list. It was yours truly. So, well, I had just finished my MBA. Imagine the boost to the ego. Preparing the list and all, yaar, like that students would tell, wow. So I'll be walking behind Swami and Swami will say this fellow, that fellow, and I'll be writing the names down and come back to the interview room and it confirmed and all this was going on. Swami was going on pumping and my ego was going on inflating. And as I told you, when Swami wants to make you feel special, he will go to the ends of the world to make you feel so special. I was this close to start giving darshans myself. Just this close. You know, he will make you feel like an avatar yourself. And this was going on. So, Swami would go to Kodaikanal during his vacations, during the students' vacations, I'm sorry. So, those students who had even a small chance of making it to the coveted list would stay back, won't go home. And if they're not on the list, then they will go home, half their vacations would be over. So, it's a bit of a sacrifice. So, I'll be sitting in my room in the evening and some student will come to me and will ask me, brother, do you think I should go home? Imagine the power I would feel. The great list locked up in my cupboard and, you know, basically in my hand is the destiny of all my brothers. This is all such nonsense. We think if we can control 10 people, we are very powerful. 100 people, we are very powerful. All this shallow power the ego feeds on because we have not experienced true empowerment within ourselves. So we keep running after these crumbs, these crutches to support our false self. This ego was now Himalayan. And well, Swami did many things. At every given opportunity, he will say, good boy, diamond. One day I remember Mr. S.M. Krishna was in the interview room. He was a very leading political member of the Congress party. In fact, he was once the Foreign Affairs Minister of India. He is next only to the Prime Minister. Very powerful politician. He was sitting at Swami's feet. I was sitting at Swami's feet. Swami told him just about a month before Swami left for Kodai. So, good boy. Such boys should join politics. I was really scared. I thought Swami is going to ask me to join the Congress party. Nothing happened. But good boy, and you know, you start feeling like gooder and best. Anyway, Swami made me announce the list. One day before leaving for Kodai, I announced the list in bhajan hall. These things don't happen that way. In me, I announced the list. I stood up in the bhajan hall, full packed bhajan hall, and I announced the list. And finally, the plane took off. So Swami, as always, he will leave his business class seat. He will walk through the aisle till he has seen the last student. He'll go and ask them, did the air hostess take care of you? Did you eat? Are you okay? Are you nauseated? Are you feeling vomiting? Anything? No, everything. So he'll inquire about the, you know, the state of all the students and then go back and sit in his seat. So all that happened, the plane landed. Swami was already in Kodaikanal. We came a little late. Swami will be very casual in Kodaikanal. He will just wear a dhoti, nothing on top. He will be just like that, roaming around. So basically, we will be living in the same house as Swami. So now and then, we will be bumping into Swami. She will go to the kitchen. Oh, Swami is there. Okay, like that. It will be like that. That is why it is such a desired experience. We will be sleeping just outside Swami's room. In fact, in the middle of the night, you can hear Swami coughing. If Swami gets off the bed, you can actually hear. You know, oh, Swami turned in the bed. It'll be so silent that, you know, you could almost hear Swami just a door. So it's a beautiful experience. Evening 6 o'clock, Swami came down with a shawl wrapped around and he asked everybody, how are you? How are you? Journey was good. By the time all the students had started calling me captain, as in captain of the Kodaikanal group, and I was very expectant. This is going to be the best trip of my life. And by the time the ego had become so huge, and it was just chewing and enjoying all the attention that it was getting, then Swami looked at me. So Swami has this great skill of looking at you but not looking at you. Look through you. So you will feel that he is looking at me but he is not really looking. I said, what is this? Suddenly Swami seems different from the last 1 month. Anyway, Swami said goodbye, good night. He went to sleep. We all went to sleep. Next day at breakfast. So Swami was sitting on his table. We were all sitting in the hall. And I was sitting at the far end on the table. Each table had 4 students. So we were all quietly having our breakfast. Swami was also eating. And then Swami called Mr. Sri Srinivas. And he started talking something to him. He didn't look happy. And he pointed towards my table. And he said something. He looked pretty angry. To date, I don't know what he said. But I think I heard, bad boy. Anyway, all the 4 of us sitting on the table were just hoping that it will be one of the other 3. Because Swami just pointed to the table. We didn't know who it was. But we knew one of us is finished. Anyway, Swami, for no apparent reason, simply put me in the deep freeze. He just suddenly stopped talking to me. Stop talking is fine, still manageable. He stopped looking even in the direction where I was sitting. So in Kodaikanal, it will be like there will be Swami, there will be all the students, and then there will be me. So 2-3 meters around me, there will be nobody sitting. Because wherever I am sitting, that side Swami won't look. So why sit there? So, you know, sit somewhere else. It became so bad that Swami won't tolerate even my presence. So, you know, when everything has a silver lining, they say even a stopped clock shows the right time twice a day. Yes, even a stopped clock shows the right time twice a day. So when like something like this happens, at least you have a reserved place. The last row. You reserved place, and whenever you want, you can come. You don't have to fight for place. It's always there. So at least something was there. It was a very relaxed trip. But I was deeply miserable. So when the ego has received so much, and suddenly something is withdrawn, it starts to feel like fish out of water. Now you might think, what is this boy's problem? He's sitting in Kodaikanal at Swami's feet, having group interviews 5 times a day. Why should anybody be miserable? Well, that's the thing. Mind is always relative. It only compares the past and the future and then makes a judgment about the present. It has no other context, no other perspective. That is all. It is just relative. So I had got so much. Suddenly when that was withdrawn, well, I was still sitting in Kodaikanal, but when that was withdrawn, it felt like the whole world crashed. The pain was so excruciating that every night I would just cry and cry and cry and put myself to sleep. And I would say, why did you get me? So many years I have dreamt to be with you in Kodaikanal, and you get me all the way, you torture me like this. At least I have gone home, enjoyed my vacation with my parents, and this kind of dialogue was going on and on and on, and it went on and on. One day I had enough. So, you see, Swami has only two legs, right? So only four people at a time can do Swami's Pada Seva. Two students will press Swami's feet, and two students will press Swami's calf and, you know, the upper leg. So we don't want students tumbling over each other to get the chance. So there will be a timetable that will be made. You four in the pre-lunch session, you four after bhajans, you four before evening bhajans, you four. So every session will have four students, who there will be a timetable. The teacher in charge did not even put my name in the timetable, because Swami had by then made very clear that he wants me nowhere near him. It was so painful. One day, I had enough. On the 11th day of the trip, I just got up and I walked straight to Swami. And I sat at his feet and started pressing his feet. Swami was reading a newspaper. He obviously did not see what had happened. And I was in a, you know, in extreme misery, you lose your mental balance. And I had kind of lost my mental balance, because Swami is fire. You can't play games with Swami. And Swami has made clear that he doesn't want you close to him. You cannot force yourself on Swami. It's not a joke. Swami, if he gets angry, and I have seen twice in my life Swami getting angry, he is pure. And when we say he is pure in everything. His anger also is pure anger. The kind of anger which we cannot even imagine. So, it was a huge risk, and I just went and sat at Swami's feet. I said, "Jo hoga dekhenge," that whatever happens, happen. And after sitting there, I realized, what have I done? Oh my God, what's going to happen? Swami will see me there and he is just going to kick me away, and it will be so devastating. And I was shivering with fear, and everybody was tense, and the teacher in charge was shocked. But what to do? Swami is there, I am sitting there, what can be done now? It's too late. Even I could not get up now, it was too late. And Swami was reading his paper. Then he finished and he folded his paper, kept it like this and looked, and he saw me sitting there, and Swami was shocked. Where the hell did this boy come from? And he was shocked, and I was like, oh God. You know, literally my hands were shaking with fear. And then, I was so weak and vulnerable. If Swami had kicked me away, get out, I would have probably run away, or I don't know what I would have done. So Swami always says, I will take you to breaking point, but I will not let you break. He was just a little merciful. And instead of asking me to get out, he said, Padmanabhan, gaadi nikalo. Padmanabhan was Swami's driver, and he sat in the car and he drove away. He simply got up and Swami left. All the students said, because of you, we got one darshan less. But anyway, it was slightly, marginally better than you being individually kicked out. So, anyway, then things went. On the 17th day, Swami did speak a word. The ice was broken, and but slowly things became normal again. But then, after this excruciating period of 17 days, over the years, of course, this thing happened many times again with me, but this was the first time ever. So that was why it is so special in my consciousness. And I realized, how could I become a bad boy from a good boy in the space of a day? Morning I am good boy, evening I can become bad boy. How is that possible? And then, of course, as my insight deepened, I began to realize I was neither a good boy nor a bad boy. In fact, I am not even a boy. These are all just labels that the mind creates. And because we are willing to play the game of labels, Swami also plays along, playing with our mind and playing with labels, until the point we are willing to give away all labels and be just as we truly are. aligned and centered. And when we are like that, Swami also stops playing the game. Then he neither raises you nor crushes you. He is also normal. Then he also stops using labels. He neither calls you good boy nor bad boy. And things become normal. So I hope this was of some use to you. I just shared now how to be centered, and you know, we will probably have deeper interactions on these things during the rest of the day. With these few words, let me thank you for a patient listening, and thank you for this opportunity. Thank you so much, and I seek your permission to withdraw. Thank you.
You give me hope when all around was lost, and I could see no point in trying. I saw love passing by me. You came into my life. You came into my life. I look around and what I had is gone. Now I finally found what I've been missing. The road I travel is so clear. Since you came into my life, you came into my life.
The morning dawn. Love the love. Love the love. Love the love. Love the love.
Love the love of the beloved. Love the love of the beloved. Take love, don't break love. Just make love your goal. So love the love of the beloved. Oh, love the love of the beloved. Love the love of the beloved. Love the love of the beloved. Hold it, enfold it. It's gold in your soul. So love the love.
Love to the gentle breeze. Love to the sunrise. Charana.